Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Chana Palabha Jadavadir Hari Gopi Chana Palabha Jadavadir Hari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parabrajakachara Sutera Sita Shri Shrimi Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Samaveda Bhaktivinda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Jaya Prabhupada. Namo Vishnupadaya. Krishna Sahib today. Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami. Dhanamani Namasi Sarasavam. Gaur Vanga Chonam. Vishnu Sri Jumadi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, we're reading today Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 6, Verse 28. Purusha Shukta confirmed. Okay. Iti Sambhritta Sambhara Purusha Vayavayaraham Tameva Purushang Jagyam Enaiva Yajamishvaram Iti Sambhritta Sambhara Purusha Vayavayaraham Tameva Purusham Jagyam Tenaiva Yajamishvaram Iti Sambhritta Sambhara Purusha Vayavayaraham Tameva Purusham Jagyam Enaiva Yajamishvaram.
Sambhritta Sambhara,
Iti. Thus. Samvrita. Executed. Sampara. Equipped myself well. Purusha. The personality of Godhead. Avayavai. By the parts and parcels. Aham. I. Tameva. Unto him. Purusham. The personality of Godhead. Yajnam. The enjoyer of all sacrifices. Tena Eva. By all those. Avyajam. Worship. Ishvaram. The Supreme Controller. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. People in general are always anxious to have peace of mind or peace in the world, but they do not know how to achieve such a standard of peace in the world. I'm sorry, I was jumping ahead here. Thus I created ingredients and paraphernalia for offering sacrifice out of the parts of the body of the Supreme Lord, the enjoyer of sacrifice, and I performed the sacrifice to satisfy the Lord. Now the purport. People in general are always anxious to have peace of mind or peace in the world, but they do not know how to achieve such a standard of peace or in the world. Such peace in the world is obtainable by performance of sacrifice and practice of austerity. In the Bhagavad Gita 5:29, the following prescription is recommended. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridim sarvabhutanam gyatva mam shantim richtati. The karma yogis know that the Supreme Lord is the factual enjoyer and maintainer of all sacrifice and of austere life. They also know the Lord is the ultimate proprietor of all the planets and is the factual friend of all living entities. Such knowledge gradually converts the karma yogis into pure devotees of the Lord through the association of unalloyed devotees, and thus they are able to be liberated from material bondage. Brahma, the original living being within the material world, taught us the way of sacrifice. The word sacrifice suggests dedication of one's own interests for satisfaction of a second person. That is the way of all activities. Every man is engaged in sacrificing his interests for others, either in the form of family, society, community, country, or the entire human society. But perfection of such sacrifices is attained when they are performed for the sake of the Supreme Person, the Lord. Because the Lord is the proprietor of everything, because the Lord is the friend of all living creatures, and because he is the maintainer of the performer of sacrifice, as well as the supplier of the ingredients of sacrifice, it is he only and no one else who should be satisfied by all sacrifices. The whole world is engaged in sacrificing energy for the advancement of learning, social upliftment, economic development, and plans for total improvement of the human condition. But no one is interested in sacrificing for the sake of the Lord, as is advised in the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, there is no peace in the world. If men at all want peace in the world, they must practice sacrifice in the interest of the Supreme Proprietor and Friend of all. Om Gyanatam Nandasya, Gananjana Salakaya, Chaksarum Tamina, Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha, Vancha Kalpatur Vishya, Kripa Sindhavya Vishya, Patatano Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavya Namaha. So the basic themes of this purport is that we all want peace, but we don't know how to obtain it. And that peace and happiness comes through sacrifice, but most people, everyone must sacrifice, but most people's sacrifice is misdirected. And then that the highest sacrifice is that directed toward Krishna. So that's what we'll be talking about today. So that we see little peace on the planet is no surprise to anyone. Every time we turn around, you know, every year there's some new war sprouting up somewhere. In fact, I was looking at some of the statistics, and they said that in the last 3,421 years of recorded history, there's only been 268 of those years without war. And in the 500... I wish people would turn their phones off. Anyway, in 5,560 years of recorded time, there have been 14,531 wars. So, yes, there's no peace in the material world, and that's about the time of Kali Yuga, give or take. So, we see that material life is filled with fear, whether it's fear from war, fear from anything else. In the verse in the Hito Upanishad, the Hitopadesh Upanishad, it says, Ahara Nidra Bhaya Matunam Cha. Men and animals and men share the activities of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And without spiritual life, it goes on to say, the human life is really on the same level as the animals. So what separates it? Obviously, higher intelligence of human beings allow us to be able to engage in thoughts of spiritual life, you know, what is beyond our little existence here, and try to understand the Supreme and our relationship with Him. So Prabhupada talks about the, first of all, that there is no peace, and why is there no peace? Well, first of all, of course, we're in the age of Kali. Kali means the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. So it's no real surprise. It's predicted thousands of years ago in the Bhagavatam, in the 12th canto, which describes the age of Kali, chapter 3, verse 7 and 8. It says, for the sake of conquering me, materialistic persons fight with one another. Fathers oppose their sons, brothers fight one another, because their hearts are bound to possessing political power. Political leaders challenge one another. All this land is mine. It's not yours, you fool. Thus they attack one another and die. So that's a pretty scary prediction, but we're basically seeing it enacting right in our own lives. So religious qualities become more and more scarce during Kali Yuga. Ungodly activities and consciousness predominates. We see that, of course, in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Yasura thinks, so much wealth will I have today, I will gain accordingly to my schemes. So much is mine now, I will increase. And then, you know, the whole idea of friends and enemies, that, you know, one who is my enemy is one who stands in the way of getting the things that I want, or the sense gratification. And thus, there's always this desire for personal power, for sense enjoyment, for gratification, and then you extend that to the national or to the larger area, whatever the particular country is. You see that then becomes war and conflict as an extension of the desire for greed and power that we see in human beings, and thus the result is, of course, is that everyone is suffering in the material world. Everybody tries for happiness. Nobody wants to, probably often say this, nobody wants suffering, but it comes. Said in the same way, happiness will come. So this is the reality of the material world. In fact, a lot of suffering seems to come, especially in our modern world. So happiness also comes of its own accord. And Prabhupada has explained that sometimes what we experience of happiness is really a cessation of pain. I don't know if everyone's ever experienced that. When you get to be my age, you know what that means. You know, once in a while, you'll reflect that you have this rare moment when nothing really hurts or feels too bad, and then, wow, what's going on? You know, so that's basically that's the cessation of pain that we're experiencing as pleasure. One of my favorite non-devotee quotes is Albert Schweitzer. You know, many of you know him. He was this great doctor. He won a Nobel Prize. He was also he was a vegetarian most of his life. And he said, happiness is nothing more than good health and a bad memory. So there we have it. Yeah. That's something, you know, that someone in our specific session could have said that. That was a good one. So through science, through medicine, through education, all these ways we try to alleviate suffering in the material world. But the result is often an increase in suffering rather than decrease. Of course, Prahlad Maharaj famously said, Maya Sukhaya Bharam Uduvato Midhum. Fools and rascals are making elaborate plans for material happiness, maintaining families, societies, and countries. And Prabhupada talked about this phrase, Maya Sukhaya. And this is from a lecture in 1974. Prabhupada said, actually, this is a fact. We have a humbug civilization. These were kind of interesting, quaint terms, at least for today's language, I'd probably say. I always thought they're very charming. We have a humbug civilization. So many cars are being manufactured every year, and for that purpose, so many roads have to be excavated and prepared. This creates a problem after problem. Therefore, it is Maya Sukhaya which means illusory happiness. And yet, we are trying to be happy in this way. So, of course, Sukhaya, happiness, maya, means illusion. And so we have this illusion of happiness, and there's this idea that everything is going better and better. And, well, people, I don't know if it's so strong now, but it used to be... All right, Stichy De Muni's not here. He'll correct me if I'm wrong on these philosophical points. But there's a term called modernism, which developed after World War II. And the idea was everything's just getting better and better. We're increasing everything. You know, we have medical advances, so many advances economically. Things are booming again. And this was a concept that was there. Of course, it's very illusory, because things weren't really getting better. As Kali Yuga progresses, things are actually getting worse. But yet, everyone works very hard to achieve this, and all of these efforts to relieve suffering and enjoy life require sacrifice. And that brings us to basically our theme of today's verse and purport. That most people don't like the idea of sacrifice, do they? I mean, that's not like a real strong preaching point to a new person. They say, you know, well, if you join this movement, you're going to have to do a lot of sacrifice, and you know, that's like, bye, you know. So it seems so inherent within our culture. And in the modern world, even has these nicknames. Even the non-devotees understand these sort of personality or temperament types that have been developing over the last few generations. Of course, even my generation, the baby boomers, was called the me generation because of their perceived basic narcissism. Everything is about me, right? So, you know, we started it. And then it continued. I guess the young adults, I never get these right, but the millennials, I guess, are the younger adults now. And one person characterized him as the trend is more of an emphasis on extrinsic values, such as money, fame, and image, and less emphasis on intrinsic values. So even those who are non-devotees who are observing these things are noticing these. And today, one author called today's generation the selfie generation, you know, because every situation demands a picture of yourself. If it didn't happen, the event actually did not happen unless there's recorded a picture of yourself, you know, right, in that situation. You know, that's reality. Okay, so we have this idea that everyone is less willing, there just is not the consciousness of sacrificing for the greater good. Of course, somebody called the generation before mine the greatest generation because the ones that went to World War II and all that. Well, you know, whatever. But it does seem to be a fact that this self-centeredness is more and more present. People are not even wanting so much to sacrifice for the greater good. Now, some people are, of course. You always have those in the mode of goodness, and they try to do something good for others or try to help humanity, and there's so many causes. And those people are there, and that's more in the mode of goodness. But basically, whatever they want to accomplish takes some sacrifice. Even sense gratification, to achieve that takes some sacrifice. If you want to have a profession, you have to work hard, you have to go to school for many years, there's a sacrifice, you know, getting in debt, you know, so they can finally get to whatever that professional position might be. And we see that sometimes, like especially sometimes immigrant populations, whole families, you know, everyone in the family works at the business, and they work very hard, and they work 16 hours a day until they finally achieve some economic success and the American dream. And others, of course, in the mode of goodness, will sacrifice for a cause or for others like that. And, of course, even in spiritual life, religious life, whether it's bhakti yoga or whatever, every path has some practice, right? Some sadhana. There's something you have to do if you want to achieve something. You don't just sit there and, well, you could if you had a really good karma, but generally it doesn't work that way. Now, it's not that the world is filled with these ungodly, greedy people necessarily. I mean, there's a lot of differences. There's sort of a whole continuum. I mean, we see materialists, those who are impious and those that are pious, and within those who are spiritualists or transcendentalists, we have impersonalists, and we also have devotees of God. And a very impious person just acts and works for their own pleasure and gain. And a more pious person maybe has some religious principles, they try to do some good in the world. And then in the real spiritual realm, you have an impersonalist, they basically act for their own personal sacrifice, for own personal liberation. Their sacrifice or their austerity is very self-centered so that they will gain this position of getting out of material suffering. Now, of course, the devotee may also follow religious principles, but acts for the satisfaction of Krishna, for for the benefit of God, for his pleasure. And that's the real difference between a devotee of God and a non-devotee. And even if people do try to act good for the good, they may be very unaware of the laws of nature. If they haven't studied the Vedic principles, if they haven't been instructed by a spiritual master, they don't know that there are karmic laws. Prabhupada has explained a couple times. There's different purports. I have one here, but I'm not going to read it right now. But that warfare, talking about these wars over the years and centuries, is a karmic reaction for animal killing. So if we continue animal killing, we're going to have war. And no matter what, they can have all the peace conferences, they're trying so many ways, but if they're still slaughtering animals, they're not going to achieve world peace. So, no peace in the world. And of course, this brings us also to Prabhupada in this purport, quotes Bhagavad Gita 5:29, and Prabhupada also called this verse the peace formula. And I think he even wrote a little article about the peace formula, didn't he? That was based around this verse. Bokaram Jagastapa Samsaravalokam Heshvram Suhridim Sarvabhutani Yatvamam Shantim Richati. A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and a benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. So Prabhupada said, if everyone knew these three things, the Krishna is the supreme controller, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, the beneficiary of sacrifices, everything is meant for him, and that he is the benefactor, well-wisher, and best friend of the jiva, of the living entity. If we know those three things, there will be world peace, harmony, things will work very nicely, cooperatively together. Now, in today's verse, it's primarily focusing on the first part, that Krishna is the benefactor of sacrifice. And we see the end, of course, that the real purpose of sacrifice is for the pleasure of the Lord. And we see this with Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma has taken the ingredients in the material world, he's taken all of the elements, and he basically creates, or at least assembles, this whole material world and offers, and now in this verse, he's offering it back to Krishna. Offering back to Vishnu. In other words, which is of course a very interesting point of bhakti yoga. So when Krishna is pleased, all blessings occur, and that's discussed in, especially in Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter. This is verse 9. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed, otherwise work causes bondage in the material world. Therefore, O son Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and in that way you will always remain free from this bondage. Then it says, in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu, and blessed them by saying, be thou happy by this yajna, sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. Yeah, so Prabhupada said in this purport, the Lord created this material world to enable the conditioned souls to learn how to perform yajna for the satisfaction of Vishnu. So while in the material world, they can live comfortably without anxiety, and after finishing the present material body, they can enter into the kingdom of God. He says, and the Prabhupada says, that is the whole program for the conditioned soul. You want to know what the purpose of life is? There it is. Prabhupada says, this is our program. You know, live properly, offering everything to Krishna in this lifetime, and then get out. Words, yes, try to live comfortably, but don't get too comfortable. You want to get out. That's the idea. So all sacrifice should be for Krishna or Vishnu. That is what's recommended. And Bhagavad Gita says, yat kuroshi, yat ashnasi, yat jahosi, didasi, yat tapashasi, kuntaya, tad kurusha mararpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. So this is, of course, a very well-known and quoted verse from Bhagavad Gita that really describes the process and the mentality of the devotee in bhakti yoga. That everything we have, everything that we do, is offered back to Krishna, is given to him. So we don't so much offer all of the ingredients, all of the articles of worship, so much as we offer our love and devotion. And that's really the key thing, because in this verse, Brahma describes how he creates from the ingredients supplied to the Lord, and then he offers them back for his pleasure. So when you think about it, Krishna possesses everything. Everything has come from him. So how can we offer anything to Krishna? I offer a flower, I offer a little food. Where does it come from? It's all come from Krishna. We're simply giving, offering it back to him. One example is, think of a young child, and the parent gives the child an allowance, for doing some chores or whatever, but really just to give him a little money. And then a holiday comes along, and he wants to buy gifts for the family, okay? So he doesn't really have enough money. So the parent gives him some money to buy gifts, and maybe they take him to the store where he can get them, and maybe his mother helps him, wrap them or whatever, the presents. And then he gives them back, gives these gifts to his mother and his father, which, when you think about it, it was their money. They bought it. They did the work. They could easily have gotten these things for themselves. They didn't need these gifts from their... So why are they so happy opening these presents on whatever, the birthday or Christmas or whatever it is? Because they're appreciating it as an act of love, right? That's it. They're appreciating the relationship, the reciprocation, the love that's involved. And so that's the consciousness that elevates activities from simply being like karma yoga to bhakti yoga, right? So we even see that in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we have a chapter on karma yoga, and then by the time the fifth chapter is called Karma Yoga Action Krishna Consciousness. In other words, offering everything, having a consciousness of sacrifice, of offering everything is good. And then the next step is really the more pure devotional step, that everything is meant for Krishna. Everything is given, for his enjoyment. And when a devotee has that mentality, then makes great spiritual advancement and is able to come closer and closer to Krishna and enjoy that loving relationship of bhakti, of Krishna, and ultimately to Krishna prema. So to find this peace, individual and collective, we must depend upon Krishna. And the Bhagavad Gita verses describes the three aspects of that we must understand, as we were discussing. I'm going to read this one verse in purport, Bhagavad Gita 2:66. One who is not connected with the Supreme can neither have transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? Prabhupada says, it is confirmed in the fifth chapter, the verse we read, that when one understands that Krishna is the only enjoyer of all the good results of sacrifice and penance, he's the proprietor of all universal manifestations, and the real friend of the living entity, then only can we have real peace. Therefore, if one is not in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be a final goal for the mind. Disturbance is due for want of an ultimate goal. Isn't that true? If someone doesn't know what's the purpose, what am I doing, what's it for, then you're anxious. You just become anxious, right? You're disturbed if you're not sure about, and especially in life, you think about, I don't know what's the purpose of life. Why am I doing this? Most of us probably at one point started thinking like that, right? And we were really looking for what is the truth? What is the purpose? What is the goal? And once you understand that, you firmly understand the goal of Krishna consciousness, then one's life becomes peaceful. And ultimately, the world can become peaceful. One must be certain that Krishna is the enjoyer, proprietor, a friend of everyone and everything. Then one can, with a steady mind, bring about peace. Therefore, one who is engaged without a relationship with Krishna is always in distress and without peace, however much he make a show of peace and spiritual advancement in life. I think a lot of devotees had an experience like, maybe there was, when we were young, maybe teenagers or, young adults, like, there must be something wrong with me. Everyone else seems to think they're happy. Everyone's having a great time. They think the world's just wonderful. Why don't I? Why do I think this isn't, No, that's intelligence, actually. Understanding that one only has distress and doesn't have peace until one understands Krishna and has that relationship with Krishna. And Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness is a self-manifested, peaceful condition which can be achieved only in relationship with Krishna. That's a nice sentence. So, sacrifice is important. It must be directed towards Krishna for the purpose of spiritual life, not for something material, not to, like, you know, fast until, you know, whatever, you know, like prisoners have these fasts sometimes until we get better conditions in the jail. That's not the purpose of sacrifice or vratas. Sometimes it's called a vrata, which is really more like a vow of a sacrifice. And of course, we are today in the last day of Kartik, the last day of Bhishma Panchaka, which is, and as many of you have observed, a wonderful time for thinking of Krishna. First of all, just because it's a beautiful month, we have the most wonderful pastime of Damodar Krishna with Yashoda, and we have this wonderful ceremony of offering. Again, and sometimes sacrifice doesn't mean you're doing something that's just, oh, this is terrible, I hate, you know, it's like so hard. That's a sacrifice, but a very, very nice, easy sacrifice, offering a candle to the Lord. What could be easier, right? And so sweet. So in Krishna consciousness, we don't just want sacrifice for sacrifice's sake or just trying to be austere for its own sake. And in fact, both Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami say in the Bhaktivinoda Sindhu that too much austerity makes one's hard heart. So that's not the idea. The idea is give up something for Krishna, and then there's reciprocation. Then one feels the advancement in Krishna consciousness. So many devotees, we should always serve a determination. Bhagavad Gita 9.14 calls this a dritta vritta, a determined vow. So whatever we are going to do, whatever we decide to do, whatever commitment we make, it must be a determined vow, just like when we take initiation. And I've been thinking about this a lot because we just had this disciples course over the weekend. You know, if you are vowing to chant 16 rounds and follow the four yoga principles, there has to be determination. Follow that vow. And a lot of devotees at Kartik do make different vows to try to increase their devotional service. And that's actually a very, very wonderful opportunity. And it's mentioned by our acharyas. It's interesting because I think I mentioned this the other day, that in some of the different books you'll read, and a lot of the different, you know, more ritualistic activities, we might say, are not emphasized as much as the basics of, you know, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, hearing, chanting, remembering, which is the most important. But, you know, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, they all mention Kartik. They all mention this is an important time. You know, this is really a Vaishnava holiday. I mean, think of the pastime. What can be a more wonderful Vaishnava? It's the epitome of a Vaishnava, you know, pastime, you know, of the devotee trying so hard, so beloved, working, with Krishna, taking care of her little child Krishna, and it's very difficult and she struggles, but because of her love and devotion, she conquers the Lord. Conquers in the sense of, you know, her love is so great that Krishna has to say, okay, I surrender to you, Mother Mata, you know, and I allow you to tie me up with the rope. So Krishna, of course, is tied by the ropes of love of his devotees. That's the big lesson of the Damodar month. And so anything that we can do, of chant extra rounds or whatever, I'm never so much into, I think I've said before, the people who, you know, try to imitate somebody like Gorky Shardas Babaji that hold his hands on his back and eat off the ground during Kartik or something like that. I mean, some of these great devotees, you know, Babaji's like that, had these severe austerities. Prabhupada never really advised like that. Just like a codicy, you know, some people do various, you know, all kinds of things. What Prabhupada say? Don't eat grains and beans, try to chant extra. So in other words, you know, yes, we want to take on a little bit of austerity, but for the purposes of increasing hearing and chanting, because that's the real activity of the Vaishnavas. Hearing and chanting about Krishna and remembering Krishna from that hearing and chanting. And when we accomplish that, if that becomes the goal or the object, then any austerity or vrata we take on is very good. It will be successful. It will help us to advance in Krishna consciousness. So anyway, this is the final day of Kartik, and I think Mukhi was giving announcements yesterday, and it was yesterday, anyway. She said something that I thought was really nice. She said, now if you've done any austerity or any vrata during the month, you should try to continue it the rest of the year. If you've done it for a month, you can probably continue it. You know, So I thought that was nice to think that way, to try to just continue strengthening our Krishna consciousness. It's not based upon 1 month or 1 day or special day. I'll be austere this day. I know I've told this story before, but there was one young devotee, you know, who took intoxication, but he did complete nirjala fasting every codicil to counteract the effect of taking intoxication. No, that's not how we do austerity. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to advance in Krishna consciousness, you know, and everything be focused on that. And, of course, Kali Yuga, Sankirtan Yajna, the chanting of the holy names. This is our yajna. So chanting is what is going to satisfy Krishna. That's what he wants to see us do. Srimad Bhagavatam introduction, Prabhupada says, in fact, in Kali Yuga, all yajnas, all sacrifices are forbidden because they are useless attempts by foolish men. This is probably like big fire sacrifices and, you know, things like that. In Kali Yuga, only the Sankirtan Yajna is recommended for all practical purposes. And Lord Chaitanya, of course, says in Shikshastakam, Cheto Darpanam Arjunam, let there be all victory for the chanting of the holy names of Lord Krishna, which cleanses the mirror of the heart and stops the miseries of the blazing fire of material existence. Prabhupada, there's a nice little purport that Prabhupada has this in Science of Self-Realization. Prabhupada says, Marjana means cleanse, and Dharpana means mirror. So the heart is a mirror. It's just like a camera. Just as a camera takes all kinds of pictures of days and nights, so also our heart takes pictures and keeps them in this unconscious state. Psychologists know this. Let's talk about the subconscious or something. The heart takes so many pictures and therefore becomes covered. We do not know when it begun, many lifetimes, but in fact, it is there. Because there's material contact, our real identity is covered. Therefore, cheto darpanam arjunam, one has to clean the heart. Now, this is interesting, because we have these deep mental impressions that are called samskaras. And that's what Prabhupada is explaining here. He's saying it's, and I really like that analogy. I think it's easy to see how in our heart we take pictures. You ever, I have this experience. I'm chanting along nicely, trying to think of Krishna, and some image comes in my mind of some ridiculous nonsense that I did 60 years ago or whatever, or saw or something, or, you know what I mean? I'm sure that happens to other people besides me, right? These are all the samskaras that are within the heart. Now, fortunately, the process, Chaitra Dharpana Marjram, the process of chanting Hare Krishna gradually will cleanse them, just like wiping the dust off a mirror. So it's like the dust on the mirror of the heart. All those photos will get cleansed away. And the more that we're hearing and thinking about Krishna and Krishna's pastimes, there's like new photos coming, right? New photos are being implanted in the heart. New pictures, new experiences, new memories. So, in other words, sometimes we even will think of a pastime of Krishna while we're chanting, you know. And have those nice moments too, the more that we're involved in this process. So we want to relish the hearing, chanting, remembering Krishna, and developing that reciprocal relationship, you know, with Krishna through that chanting as we become more and more purified. And then what experiences real happiness. And there is a, not just a quantitative, like sometimes we say material life, you know, is the difference between an ocean and, you know, the ocean of happiness and devotional service compared to the water in a calf's hoof print or something like that, or a drop of water in the desert of the material world. But you know, quantitative, also very qualitative. And devotees experience the difference. We know what's the difference between material happiness and spiritual happiness. You know, maybe not super deeply, not that we're always on the level of Krishna prema, but we know, we experience it. We know when we're feeling spiritual happiness in our heart from the processes of hearing and chanting. And, you know, we know when there's some, you know, material gratification. Now, so we want to gravitate more and more to spiritual happiness and spiritual peace. And that will come more and more by sacrifice, but not just any sacrifice, particularly the sacrifice is given by Srila Prabhupada, given by Acharyas, given by Krishna, by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, Prahlad Maharaj, the nine processes of devotional service, Bhakti Yoga, beginning with Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. Right. Okay. Any questions or comments? Sangha?
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you. If you look at the word sacrifice, it seems to relate well to the word sacred or sacrament.
Same root, I'm sure. Yeah.
I imagine. I'm not sure. So it's meant for God and for devotees. It seems like sacrifice and surrender are synonymous.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it involves a lot of introspection because it means we have to have an ongoing change of identity. It's an inner transformation.
Yes.
You know, to surrender to different things daily and to really get it and feel it and live it.
Well, I really like that. Shanga Thakur was saying that sacrifice is really very synonymous with surrender. And also, I absolutely agree with you, something we experience continually. You know, sometimes we think, oh, does someone surrender to Krishna or surrender to Prabhupada? No, it's not a one-time thing. Okay, I surrendered, I finished. It's, like you said, daily. It's constant. You know, and Krishna seems to give us a lot of opportunities to surrender. And in fact, there's that old expression that we used to say many years ago in the movement that we thought Prabhupada said. I don't know if he actually said it. It's one of those. Prabhupada said, if Krishna likes you, he gives you everything. If Krishna loves you, he takes everything away. Now, that might be a little over-dramatized, but still, that's the idea. You know, I mean, Krishna gives us opportunities to surrender. But taking things away means taking material things away that are going to interfere with our spiritual life, which are going to make us unhappy. And giving us himself in bhakti.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Oh, I'm sorry. One
time Madhumati told me, she said, culture means sacrifice.
Yeah, what does?
Culture.
Culture, okay.
Particularly in the context of hospitality, the culture of respect, the culture of etiquette. This is all sacrificing our ego for the pleasure of another, really, you know what I mean? We will extend ourselves. In the Vedic culture, there was this culture, and it implies sacrifice.
That's a really wonderful point, because we have our theoretical understanding of what Krishna consciousness is, what bhakti yoga is, but then there's the implementation, right? You know, you've got the sambandha, but then you also need the abhideya, the practice. And part of the practice, as you're saying, is the culture of how we act with one another, how we act with the deities, how we act with Krishna, the Guru, etc. And even to the point of Vedic culture, as you said, the way you treated guests was super important. You read all the time in the scriptures in Bhagavatam about, you know, the way that, I mean, even the way that, like, Krishna would himself, personality of Godhead, a Brahmin come to see him who absolutely knew he was the personality of Godhead, and Krishna treats the Brahmin like with all respect, bowing down to them, you know, all. So, yes, it's called, you know, and I don't think we have to worry about, well, is it current, is it not current, is it Varnashram? It's Vaishnava culture. I just like to think of it like that. Make it simple, not too many arguments. There's Vaishnava culture, and Prabhupada taught us a lot about, not everything, but a lot about Vaishnava culture, at least as much as we could probably learn and absorb. Right. Yes, Brian.
I was thinking that verse you quoted, 3.9, Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, yeah.
Jagyartat karmana annatra lokayam karma bandana tadartam karma kunteya mukta sanga samachare. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed, otherwise work will bind one. So as a logic, I forgot whether Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur or Sanatana Goswami Pad put a logic, because I saw also Prabhupada translate the first verse on fourth chapter, next chapter. Arjuna is asking Krishna, why, if my purpose of life is to be liberated,
to have a peace and get out of this trouble. Why you are engaging me in this ghastly warfare? Mm-hmm. So then Prabhupada gave a nice answer. He said, because Arjuna is born with a psychophysical nature of fighting spirit. He may desire to go to the forest and study scripture until death comes and then he will be peaceful, liberation. But the psychophysical nature has to be purified while we are living here. Otherwise it will continue next life, next life, next life. So therefore, Jagga has to be there. The life has to be sacrificed for the pleasure of the Lord. Otherwise the psychophysical nature we cannot destroy. It will continue us going.
And that, you know, there was that discussion in Bhakti Samrita Sindhu about that when I was saying about hardening the heart and all that. And then, of course, the concluding verse is Yukta Vairagya, the Yukta Vairagya verse.
Yes,
or in other words, we have to act in this world, but by using everything for Krishna's service.
Yes.
And that includes using our propensities, if we're Kshatriya or whatever it might be. And otherwise, you said a person is going to be impelled to some degree, until we're very pure, to act according to its nature. I think there's a point when one, you know, would be sufficiently purified that, you know, they would act really just as Krishna wanted them. But then Krishna might ask them to act according to that nature and body that they have, like he did Arjuna.
Yes.
So you kind of come.
The verse given by Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu says, "Tabat karmani kurvita na niravedda javata matkata sravanadova sadda javanna jayate." He said two things, or I take two things out of that sloka. When someone engaging his natural propensity in the devotional service, but he has to come to a point where he will feel, I'm satiated with the material sense and I'm done. Mm-hmm. And that's the one. And second point, Krishna says that he has some affinity to hear about Krishna. Mm-hmm. He can't stop. I want to hear more. That time he said, okay, you are done literally out of your psychophysical inclination. You can now go forward.
Yeah.
With renunciation.
I mean, that would definitely at least the position probably of Raghu Nuga Bhakti, where one is, you know, naturally inclined and then one is very free from material desires, by from Nishta and beyond. Yeah, that's. Tell me later where that verse is. I like that one. Okay. I'll forget if you tell me now.
This is a tough one, right? But anyhow, I hope you can. The atheist would say, why God need all this worshiping? Why he needs all these sacrifices? You know, like, I mean, because I'm dealing with them online.
Who asked that?
The atheist.
Oh, the atheist, right?
Atheist would say, why he needs all this worshiping? Why you have to worship him? Why he needs all the sacrifices? So, what would you say?
What would you say? What would you say?
I say it's for our benefit, really. If we understand the position of God, really, he doesn't need it, he's self-sufficient. You know? But I say, for our benefit.
For our benefit.
You know?
Good question. You answered your own question there. God doesn't need our sacrifice, we need it. We need, and as he says, sacrifice is like, it means like it's like surrender. We need to surrender to God, so therefore, he shows us and asks us how to do it.
That's right.
Good. Okay, anything else?
In Bhagavad Gita 18:65, the verse before the four secret formula that Prabhupada said, Manmana Bhava.
Yeah.
If you break down the word-to-word meaning, and one day I did, it was very nice. Jiva Goswami Pad gives this, that why do we have to pay obeisances? Why do we have to do sacrifice? Why do we have to all this? That verse actually gives. He says, sarva griya tamam bhiya sinamaya paramam bacha istrasi me dhiramiti te bakshami tato bakshami te hitam. For your benefit, for your false ego to disappear, for your suffering to end, you should think of me and bow down to me, worship me. It's not for Krishna. Krishna is not telling that he needs a bow down or worship. Right. It's very nice. That verse is very nice. That last word, it says, Tato bhakshami te hitam. Te hitam means for your benefit you should do this.
Yeah.
Very nice. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm always, no matter what books we read like that, it's always interesting how so much of the real basic philosophy really comes down to Bhagavad Gita, doesn't it? It's like everything seems to be there.
Yes.
And even sometimes you'll get these really advanced analysis by Jiva Goswami or something. Quote Bhagavad Gita. So, you know, this is a basis of the philosophy. Along with Bhagavatam, of course. Oh, sorry, one more. Okay.
Hare Krishna, I wonder if doing the needful is a higher and necessary step in our surrender, you know, something maybe beyond our propensity, our psychophysical nature, just doing the needful sometimes.
Yeah. Krishna does say that, you know, he'll carry, preserve what we have and carry what we lack. He says, to do everything for him, and he'll basically take the results. He says, you know, you're also earlier, says, you know, you're entitled to your work, but not the results. So whether you are succeed or not, that's up to Krishna. So we also have to think that way. I may be seeming like a time when I've been asked to do more than I can do, and I do the best I can, and the results are up to Krishna. And sometimes he also says that Prabhupada said Krishna doesn't ask us to surrender more than we're capable of. So somehow, along with the instruction, will come the capacity, will become the empowerment to do that. And so that's the way, you know, even with the spiritual master, that's the should be the attitude. If there's an instruction from the spiritual master to me, along with that comes sort of the empowerment or the ability to be able to accomplish it. I mean, if one's very surrendered into that. Although sometimes, of course, the tests can seem very difficult in the material world. But I think there again, it takes, that's where faith comes in. I think that's a real key component of faith. You know, in other words, there's the six signs of surrender, and one is to think that Krishna will always protect me, I'm always under his care, you know, that he will give me all ability and like that. So, I think sometimes these things are tests of our faith, not just of our ability, but of our faith in Krishna, that things, you know, will happen as they should, or at least, you know, do the best of our ability. Yeah, I mean, it's a good question and a complex topic. That's off the top of my head, the best I can say. Okay. Oh, thank you. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.